Today, I shared a fantastic conversation with Paul Carrick Brunson, known as the Love Doctor and Real Life Hitch. Paul is a relationship counselor, matchmaker, television host, serial entrepreneur, and author who specializes in relationship science. Paul was chosen as the world's most influential matchmaker by the Matchmaking Institute. Today, we talk about Paul's book. It's complicated, but it doesn't have to be. A modern guide to finding and keeping love. What I really wanted to learn from Paul today is how, with his decades of experience, he helps his single clients find lasting love. He shares the biggest challenge facing singles today and four key principles to follow to determine who is a good match. If you're someone looking for a partnership, I am sure this conversation will help you along your journey. Enjoy. Welcome to Let's Talk Love, the podcast that brings you real talk, fresh ideas, and expert insights every week. Our guests are the most trusted voices in love and relationships, and they're here for you with tools, information, and friendly advice to help you expand the ways you love, relate, and communicate. We tackle the big questions, not shying away from the complex, the messy, the awkward, and the joyful parts of relationships. I'm your host, Robin Ducharme. Now, let's talk love. Well, welcome everyone to this episode of Let's Talk Love. I'm so happy to have our guest, Paul Brunson. And Paul, so Paul, you have three names in your name, Paul Carrick Brunson. So is this two last names? Is this your middle name? Where is Carrick from? Is that, tell me. Is that your middle name?
That is my middle name. There's a long story. Yeah, there's a long story for the middle name, but yes.
Yeah, that is a middle name. I really like the fact that you have your middle name in your name, because I mean, I could say Robin Helen Ducharme, but I don't. I say Robin Ducharme. Maybe I should say Robin Helen Ducharme. It would honor my grandma, who I'm named after. Yeah. Anyways, that's a good one. I like it.
Exactly.
So, Paul, I'm so happy to have you on the show today. I really have been following you since 2012, and okay. I love your work. And I just think you're just such a genuine person with great integrity from what I know about you. And you're just so incredibly smart and also just so relatable. So I'm so excited for this conversation.
Wow. I mean, that's the best way to welcome anyone. I will take it. Can I say I'm honored by the 2012. That's interesting. That's over 10 years ago. So that's some time.
It is. I'll tell you more about it in our conversation. Okay. So Paul, today we're going to be talking obviously about love and relationships and about your book, which I so enjoyed. And I learned, I mean, every time I read a relationship book, I learned so much, and I learned a lot from your book. And I am a former matchmaker and love coach. And so, you know, a lot of things you were talking about in your book, I know and I resonate with, but obviously there's always something new to learn. And when I was researching you, and I know that, you know, your former life, you worked as an investment banker, right?
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes.
And then you switched careers. You did a 180, 360, whatever you call it, and went into the love business. And I really like the story of how in the process of, you know, switching careers, and if I'm wrong, you please correct me, but you and your wife, Jill, hosted singles dinners. Like, you would invite your friends that were single together and play games and interact and matchmake in a way. So can you just tell us a little bit about that and how you got into becoming, you know, entering the love business? And it was kind of almost like a natural, it seemed to me, like from learning about you, that it seemed quite natural transition.
In hindsight, it definitely was. I believe that we're always, you know, in the place that we're meant to be. And even though that place may feel uncomfortable, we have to stop, take a moment, take a breath, and understand why are we there. And the key way to do that is to think about the lesson, right? What are you learning in the moment? And what's interesting for me is that, as you mentioned, Robin, my first part of my career was in finance. And I hated it. You know, I would think to myself, why am I here? What's the point of all of this? But it led me to understand humanity and why we do the things that we do. And it actually gave me skills. And those skills allowed me to start a summer camp program or a program, a tutoring program. And then it was through that tutoring program that allowed me to become a matchmaker, right? And so you could see that I would not have become a matchmaker if it wasn't for the summer camp, if it wasn't for the tutoring, if it wasn't for the finance career. But specifically to your question, I had, so this is the summer of, oh my gosh, what is this? This is 2005. This is the summer of 2005, roughly. My wife and I had a summer camp where it was a tutoring program. But we had it up and down the East Coast of the United States. But in particular, this one was running in Washington, D.C. And it was focused on children who were coming from low-income households and, you know, needed help with math and science and English. And in the camp, when you registered, we would ask you a series of questions. One question that turned out to be the, you know, the million-dollar question was, well, how many parents live in your household, Robin, right? And what you would see is that you'd see these child after child after child would say, well, I only have, you know, one parent, or I only live with grandma, or I only live with auntie. And so there was a succession of, I don't live with both of my parents. And there was very little male representation in the household.
Yes.
And I thought that was really interesting. And so I would talk about that often at the camp. And the counselors at the camp would say, well, Paul, why don't you just become Hitch? You could just be Hitch and hook up all the moms and dads, right?
Oh, I love that.
And that would be it. And so that was what seeded the idea for my wife and I to start hosting these parties that we called the Brown Sugar Party. Now, Robin, I have to ask you, do you know why we called it the Brown Sugar Party? And these were parties at our house where we would invite singles over. Do you have any guess?
The brown sugar party. Well, the guess would be that you're inviting people of like black people to your parties. Are you? Does it have to do with your heritage? Being like you're Jamaican, and I know in DC there's a lot of representation. So is that something?
So this is why I ask, because this is the answer that everyone gives me, but that wasn't it. It was because we were drinking alcohol it was brown sugar. It was like,
like,
it was
rum.
Like Hennessy.
Rum.
Yeah, rum. Yeah.
Okay.
It was any kind of brown sugar alcohol. Because that's what went along with the party. But it's interesting because whenever I say brown sugar, everyone says, oh, cause it was a black thing. And I was like, no, it was just everything. Oh, I know why. So we were drinking because a lot of it had to do with questions and answers, and if you didn't get the question or answer right, you had to, you had to drink.
You had to drink. It was a drinking game party too.
It was a good. But the point though of the party was to allow for an environment for people to interact and meet outside of a club or outside of work, because you know, circa 2005, 2006. The top way that we were meeting significant others wasn't yet online. It was through work. The church was still up there. Friends and family was still up there. Restaurants, clubs, bars, you know, were still up there. But people were clamoring for new ways to connect. And that was an environment that we thought where it was a bit prearranged because we only invited, you know, it was heterosexual. So it was seven men, seven women. But we invited you. So there was a little bit of strategy, you know, to.
Yes, to invite. I love that.
That's what happened. That's how it started.
Well, and you were, it's such a gift that you and your wife were giving the community and giving that opportunity to meet other singles, and you were setting it up. I mean, I just think it's a beautiful thing. Yeah,
it was fun. It was definitely fun.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I would love to be at the Brown Sugar Party. It sounds great. So today I really want to dive into your book. And also there's community questions that we are always asked of our experts. And so I wanted to integrate those as well. Okay. Your book is called It's Complicated, But It Doesn't Have to Be, A Modern Day Guide to Finding and Keeping Love. And really the finding is a big piece. The keeping is a big piece. So, you know, that is, you know, we'll go through, I think, you know, really you talk about the tenets of what it really is to attract and bring in somebody that is a good match for you. And it's not just about your type hype and all that stuff we're going to go through. But then really, it's like once you meet that person, is this for real? Do you really want to get into a marriage or a long-term partnership? Are you ready for that and what it entails? And then how do you keep that going? So one of the first community questions, one of the first community questions is, what do you see as the biggest challenges singles face in the dating world today? And how would you suggest people approach them? That's a big question.
Yeah, that's a big, and that's a popular question. You know, so I think one thing that we have to understand, and this is around the world. So I primarily work in the UK, in the US, and all throughout the Caribbean. And so I'm seeing lots of different cultures. And what's interesting is within each one of those nations, within all the cultures within those nations, you have people talk about how hard it is, how challenging it is to meet a significant other in this day and age, right?
There's all these reasons, right?
There's so many reasons. So the list of reasons are numerous. But one of the bigger reasons that I believe we have such an issue today is this whole paradox of choice. And Barry Swartz wrote a book a long, long time ago around this, around the paradox of choice. And he's the one who phrased the term less is more, or you could say more is less, right? And this whole notion of analysis paralysis. So whenever we're presented with many different perceived options, and I want to underscore perceived, whenever we're presented with many perceived options, we take less satisfaction in the choice or in the option that we actually choose. So you think about the number one source of meeting a significant other today is online, right? Without question, it's online. A matter of fact, there's some studies that suggest that up to 80% of new spouses are, the derivative is online, right? Yes. There's a lot of Prince Harry, Meghan Markle commentary right now. And I think one of the biggest epiphanies lately about them was, oh my God, they technically met on Instagram, you know?
So you have like back in the day, it used to be like one in three, right? Which actually was a large number. I remember that when I was matchmaking 2014, 2015, it was like 33%. Now, if you're saying 80, I'm not surprised, but wow.
Right. And by the way, that 80% number is just going higher and higher.
Oh, yes.
And higher. So, but here's the issue as it connects to Swartz is that we have perceived options. So many of us think we can get onto our mobile device and just keep swiping and swiping and swiping and have endless choice. And therefore, when we do end up making a choice, we have so little satisfaction, so little value in that choice that right now, startling studies that I've seen suggest that one out of every two people who are on a date that goes wrong, right? So you think that the date isn't going to last or, you know, you want to get out of the date, they have already jumped back online on a dating app before they reach home. So they're already in that swipe, already in the same period. So the whole point is that we have less satisfaction in the choices that we're making. This, I think, is driving a lot of the issues. Not all, but a lot of the issues when it comes to us being able to not connect. And so the answer to that, the antidote to that, is that you want to understand, A, you don't have endless choice. Just because there's 50 million people on Tinder doesn't mean that you have, you know, 50 million options because they're not all out there for you. So that's is to intellectually understand you don't have endless choice. Secondly, is to put more energy into the choices that you're actually making, right? And that yeah. energy is not only in the choice selection, but also how you show up, why you show up, the evaluation of the person when you show up, which hopefully we'll get into, because I think that's also the evaluation Absolutely. Or how to choose a partner wisely is such a mystery to people. But these are some of the antidotes. But the reason, because your question was, is why? I think that it's a lot of it has to do with the analysis paralysis, right? We think that yes. there's endless choice out here.
Yeah, I fully agree with you, Paul. So one of the, you know, I think this quote from your book is a great start to the getting into the deep of what makes a good match. Because people are going to be like, okay, I mean, I'm sure you get this question all the time as a matchmaker. Okay, well then, okay, how is this going to work, right? And you say, I found in my practice that if you can confirm that a partner shares your top values, has a personality that meshes with your own, which is what I want to talk a lot about, because people miss that one, and right. meets your non-starters, and there is a healthy level of romantic attraction. Okay, it's not always about just all the romantic attraction, which people are way too focused on. Your chance of making a successful match goes from virtually nothing, from about 0.04% to nearly 50% chance. So 50% chance, right. Okay. But okay, Paul, do you want to expand on that quote before we go into really talking about the non-starters and personality types? And what do you want to say about that? I think that really yeah. sums it up though, don't you think?
No, absolutely. And that is a great dovetail off of that last topic that we were talking about, because I think a big challenge that so many of us have is then when we're out on these dates and we're really trying to, you know, even like you asked yourself, like, what is a date? You know, to me, it's about exploring if there is romantic interest or if you're already in a relationship to expand or to sustain that romantic interest, right? That's to me what a date is. But unfortunately, when a lot of people go on dates and they don't yet have that partner, they don't know how to determine if that person is the right partner. You know, especially yes. when most dates kind of start with people just binge drinking and then continuing to drink into the day. So it's like, you know, how do you assess? And so that quote that you just pulled from the book is, I think, a baseline. It's like, okay, let's identify, yes. well, what are your values? Let's see if there's a complement in personality. Let's see if there's any non-starters. So these are things that directly impact your health or happiness. You know, do you have any non-starters? Because if you do, it's going to directly impact my health or happiness. You know, let's make sure that there's mutual attraction here, minimal level okay. of mutual attraction. If you have all of those things, you start from yeah. a place of strength opposed to a place of weakness.
We at Real Love Ready are so excited to be hosting In Bloom, a love and relationship summit, April 14th and 15th, 2023 in Vancouver, BC. Join us for an insider pass to the most trusted relationship expertise, an intimate weekend of in-person or virtual learning, growth, and community. We're bringing you the insights and tools you need to learn and bloom in your relationships. Head over to realloveready.com to learn more and get your tickets. We truly hope to see you there. Yes. And I imagine in your practice, what you're seeing with clients, which I was day in, day out, is people come in and I say, okay. And, you know, and maybe it was my own trap I was falling into, was like, what are you looking for in a mate? Right? That was one of my first questions, of course. And it would inevitably turn into, this is my type. This is my list. Right. And I'm making, right. I've got my piece of paper, my pad of paper and my pen, and I'm writing down the list of this. Yes. Like we talked about in online dating. It's like, this is this wish that you're putting out in the universe for this perfect person that looks like this, that acts like this, that, right? And it's all, yes. you know, for women, he, you know, of course he has to be over 6 feet. He has to be tall. He has to be successful. He has to be handsome. He has to be well-groomed. And like you have this list in your book too. And the funny thing is there's like these oxymorons that are obviously present, right? Like he has to take charge, lead and direct. until she disagrees with his direction. And a man who will pay the bills, but she has to be an independent woman. Right? So right. What are you talking right. about? And then the men right. are like, okay, she's hot, she's attractive, she's skinny, she's slim, but maybe she's got a little bit of a booty, whatever. But she's soft and gentle and nurturing, but she's also has her stuff together and she's independent.
Right.
But she also right. has to be a good mom right. and she's like drama free. Right. But it's just like all these things that you, like, what do you, and then you say, like, at the end of the day, are you asking for a computer like program? Like, is it a bot? What's the word you use? Bot or whatever. I can't
bot,
remember.
Yeah.
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 But this is the problem with the type.
This is
really where people are at, though. And when they're going online, they've got their type. When they're putting it out there, it's so superficially focused. So we really have to steer away from that.
We do, and I guess we also have to understand that we get the type subconsciously. The type comes to us.
Yes,
and it's based
absolutely
on
true.
It's based on the content that we've consumed across our life, you know. So
yes.
The type begins in that whole attachment theory, with attachment theory. So in that attachment phase, so when we are literally, from 0 to age 4, roughly, when we're forming that first love with the caregiver, that's where our type begins. Whoever that first person is that we felt safe with, who nurtured us. That becomes the ideal person, because here, this is exactly the person who is supporting us. And then from there it grows, right? And when I say grows, is the type evolves. Mm-hmm. So it's about, where do we live, who we're socialized around, right? The clubs and activities that we're in, the television shows that we're watching, right? As we get older, organizations that we're a part of, organizations that we're not a part of, right? All of these things, all of the content that we consume. And right now, a lot of it is TikTok and Instagram and what we perceive as the ideal. So the ideals of all of these types become what we see as our go-to. And so we have to understand, we just have to accept this. You know,
yes.
This is why a huge part of relationships with other people begins with the relationship we have with ourself. And you can't have a relationship with yourself without understanding of yourself and why it is that you think the way that you do. What drives that thought, right? To actually do that exploration helps you tremendously, because
yes.
then you can understand how to manage and change if necessary. So I'm totally with you on the type. The types tend not to be successful. Fences almost, because if someone doesn't fit that type, we end up pushing them away, whereas they could actually be a terrific match for us. And
yes.
so if we understand this, that types are not good, which they're not, right? Types are not good. Then what we need to do is understand why it is that we create these types. And it's because of the content that we consume. So therefore, how do we change it? Consume different content.
Really love that. You made an Instagram post on this a while back, and it was something around, it's so important what we daily consume. What books are
yes.
you reading? What shows
yes.
are you watching? Who are you
yes.
interacting with? Like, I mean, it's just, if it's all like, you know, you're watching horror movies, you're watching like the you know, I don't know, you're reading, I do read the daily news on my apps every day just to see what's going on in the world, but I have to take that with a grain of salt too. But I know exactly what you're saying right now. And I think, you know, going back to how our attachments are formed and where our type is formed, I mean, it's so much of this is all of that, as well as, like, for instance, like little girls and boys, like watching cartoons. It's like the fairy tales.
Right.
And it's like, I mean, I grew up, like, we all grew up on that. A lot of us did, from a very young age until I stopped watching cartoons, but all of it's the same message. The woman, the girl gets saved. It's like by Prince Charming. And it's like everything has to do with finding that prince and happily ever after. It's like there's no set. That's not the way it goes.
Yeah, Robin. I mean, that's a brilliant, yeah. brilliant point. Because even the prince, who is the prince? The prince is always like, describe the prince. He's tall, dark, handsome. And actually, and I mean, even to get into to the racial element, is like, you know, the prince is technically not dark. He is tan features, but he's never a black prince.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So it's like you have all of these types that you're right.
Yeah.
As a child, we're seeing and we buy into subconsciously.
Yeah. So how do you work with clients to, because you know, it's talking about getting to know yourself first. How do you work with clients to get to know their top values? Just quickly, like, do you point them to a website? Do you, because I just think, I thought about this because I'm like, I know I've done a lot of exercises like this in my life. And if I was to say my top values, I mean, off the bat, I'd know, you know, my family, my friends, my spirituality. It's funny, but even this year, I think your values can change, or maybe you just identify them differently. But like this year, because we've gone through a lot of hardship in our family, I'm like, joy. I cannot live without joy. It is a must. It is like, I need that in my life. It is a value that I hold so dear. And I didn't realize it until I was without it. I'm like, oh, you know? So how do you help people nail down their values before they are looking for that match in a partner?
Yeah. You know, it can be tricky, because to your point is values evolve. I even think they mutate in a way, because, you know, joy has probably always been a value, but it's almost shape-shifted, you know, across your life. But one of the quickest ways, one of the best exercises, is to sit down and to identify, where do you spend your extra money and your extra time? Now, a lot of us don't have extra money or extra time, but I'm talking about, say, you don't work on Sunday, right? So let's say last Sunday you didn't work. Exactly. What are you doing with that time? Now, clearly, you could have worked all week, so you know you sleep in, right? It doesn't mean that you're valuing sleep, although we all should value sleep. But what I'm saying is that then when you wake up and you have that extra time, you have some time on your hand, you have a free afternoon. What do you do with it? Right. Yeah. And if you look, and then where are you spending your money? Right. When you have a little bit extra to spend, where are you spending it? If you look across the last several months at that extra time and that extra money, that is probably going to be precisely what you value. And the reason why this is to some people a shocking exercise is because we begin to see that we may value certain things that we don't profess to value, if you know what I mean, right? Mm. That we don't profess to value. So what I found a lot of the time with matchmaking is that if I were to ask, what do you value? Right out the gate, people would say, religion. You know, it's all about religion. It's this. And then when you begin to unpack their last several months or year, you realize, hold on for a second. Like, do you truly, is this really what you value? And so, because you're not spending any time or money towards it, so you want to look at those things. And that same exercise that you apply to yourself is how you evaluate someone else's values. Because you could ask someone until they're blue in the face, what do you value? And they will always give you what they either want you to think they value.
Or altruistically, what they think they should value. Yeah.
What they think, exactly. Because they're out here trying to get that job as your woman or your man, you know? But instead, that's why the evaluation period in dating is so important. And so by the time you're on that third, fourth, fifth date, you should understand, or you're on the call, like, what have they been spending their time on? What have they been spending their money on? You know, they say they value family, but they never call their parents. They never want to see their parents. They're estranged from their family. So how is it that they truly value family?
You know? Oh my gosh, I really like this, Paul. Yeah. This is really good exercise. Fantastic. And this goes to, I think, what's really also very important, which you mentioned a few times, is, you know, the fourth, fifth date. It's like, give somebody, okay, first date, if it's a complete disaster and you're like, this person is absolutely clearly not a match, I do not want to see that person ever again, forget it, right? However, right. like Rachel Greenwald, who we both know and have learned under, she always said, like, you give people three dates minimum. Like, just, let's just start there and then we'll go up from, or not. But, and I really agree with that, because it's like, the first date is just like, you posted something about this. It's like you're interviewing, or it's like a facade. You're meeting somebody that is probably not showing up as themselves fully.
Yeah, they're representative.
represent their representative, right? Yeah. And by the second date, okay, maybe you're a little bit warmed up by the third. So I just think you have to give somebody time, and you're not going to see their value show up or get to know that about them without giving them those like more than 3-4 dates, 5 dates. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. So to that point, this touches upon what we were talking about earlier, as far as when you said that first question was, well, how do we, like, it's so hard to find a partner in this day and age. And my thought was, okay, to counteract analysis paralysis, you have to put more effort into the selection. Part of that is this idea of, and Rachel's idea of, okay, I'm going to see this person 3 times. That's a totally different mindset that you have to go into that first date with than if I'm going to see this person maybe for just 30 seconds, then I'm going to walk out, right? The latter, they become more disposable. The former is hold on. If I'm going to go on 3 dates with this person, I am going to do a lot more analysis upfront, but also I'm going to now have enough time to give my questions time to breathe. And I'm not going to feel as rushed, but I'm going to also be analytical. It's a different approach that you take. Now, let me underscore, if you go on a first date, so you should go into your first date thinking that you're going to see this person many times after. But if you go into the first date and there is no, you feel there's the person's not listening to you, mm-hmm. right? They're not listening to you. And or you feel as if there's no physical attraction from your side. No, I'm talking about zero physical attraction.
Zero.
Then there's no need for a second date. There's no need for anything. But if you find that they listen to you, there's a minimal level of physical attraction, you need to show up on that second date. It's very important.
Yes.
Very important.
Because there is this notion. I love talking to you, Paul. It's so funny. I feel like we're like, I love matchmaking conversations. This is my wheelhouse. I love it. So what about this notion that you can build attraction? Okay, let's just say, right? You had a great conversation. This person's super interesting. They listen to you. But like you said, there's no attraction. What about this notion that you can build attraction over time?
Yeah. So the question is, I love this question because this has also been one of the most popular questions through the years, right? So I now have the research to back up all of my answers on this one.
Yes.
So if there is, let's like cut right to the chase on physical attraction. The real question around that for most people is, would you have interest in having sex with this particular person, mm-hmm. right? Ultimately, and I'm not talking about one-off, I'm talking about continually, or, you know.
I'll try it once and see if I like it.
Yeah, because especially talk to a lot of guys, you're like, well, yeah, one time. But no, I'm talking about continue, right? So this is one question. Now, the next is there zero or is there minimal? Because there's a difference between zero and minimal. Zero means no. I have no attraction. Minimal means, yeah, I've seen a lot better looking guys or girls or whatever it may be. And you know what? There's certain things about them that are, you know, that are not appealing, but minimally, that's minimal.
It's
like, yeah, I can see it. Maybe. Yeah. If you could see it, maybe. That is enough to get you into the game, because what the studies then show is that attraction builds over time as we become more intimate. And I'm talking about physical intimate. I'm talking about emotionally intimate, because there's a whole range of emotional intimacy.
Yes.
And the highest level of emotional intimacy is complete, utter vulnerability. And in order to get to that highest level of emotional intimacy, you need to have complete, utter trust. And here's my guarantee, is if you have complete, utter trust with someone that you could be entirely you and vulnerable with, I guarantee you, if you started at minimal attraction with them, they will be super hot to you. Super hot to you, right?
Oh yeah.
So this is something that we have to understand. Then also, from a pure artificial standpoint, no, I shouldn't say artificial, from a pure superficial standpoint, because this is what a lot of the guys, I hear a lot of the guys, a lot of the fellas, but and I know a lot of the ladies say the same thing is, oh my gosh, I'm minimally attracted to them now. Once they get 10, 15 years older, like, no. Let me tell you. We live in a day and age where you have men and women who are 60 and 70 physically looking way superior to 30-year-olds out here. I mean, we have right now, we're living in a different age where we are much more health conscious. You know, even though we have high levels of health issues, we're just more health conscious and we're more cosmetically aware than we were in the past. And when I talk about cosmetics is you know, you think about even how shirts fit people, you know, and jackets and clothing, they fit and they hug in different areas to enhance the physicality of us, right? Yes. It's a different age. It's a different age. And so from a superficial standpoint, there's no, like, we're just getting better with age, you know, in essence. But then also the larger point is if there's a minimal level, I guarantee you, you work on the emotional intimacy piece, it's going to take you home. Yes. It's going to move you from, yeah, kinda, to, oh yeah.
Yes, because I can be fully myself with that person. I can share a lot more than just this physical. It's just this deeper openness that you can have with somebody, and that lends itself to good sex. This is not just, we know that it's not just like this, having like sex with somebody you don't know is like, you know, often uncomfortable. Like, I mean, what? You know, and then it's just, but if you know somebody really well and you love them and you have that, or let's just say you have that deep sense of, I'm feeling really good around this person outside of the bedroom, inside, it's going to be even better. So, yeah.
Hands down.
Yeah. So let's talk about non-starters, because I want to understand how you help your clients identify what those are. You said they affect your health and your happiness long-term. So how do you, this is a need, right? Or is this is a want, or there's not a want or a preference. This is like a deal breaker. Like how do you, I want to understand the difference between non-starter, need, and deal breaker. Or are they the same?
Good question. So I we all have wants. To me, a want is a bonus, you know?
Yes.
But a need is never a bonus, because a need is what you require. A need actually is a part of your boundary. And I always say that the higher our boundaries, the higher quality of life we have. So a need is like a brick in your boundary, you know, your boundary fence. That's what a need is. And so a non-starter is exactly that. It's one of those bricks. And a non-starter is something that directly impacts health and happiness. And really what that means is it directly impedes, you know, it stops your health or happiness. So a big one, the desire to have children.
Yes.
You know, this comes up all the time, you know, someone who feel, you know, so, and it's typically talked about from the woman's perspective, but even I'll talk about it from my perspective. I knew since I was little that I wanted to have kids. I had this Cabbage Patch kid named Raymond that I used to carry around all the time.
I love that.
I had a Cabbage Patch kid too.
That was our generation.
You did. What was your cat? Do you remember?
You know what's really funny is that I was that girl that had dolls because my mom and dad bought them for me. But I had two brothers, and so I played more with my brother's toys than I did with the dolls. I can't remember their names at all. I wasn't attached to them in any way.
Oh my gosh! Well, Robert, I was in love with little Raymond. This is how in love I was. I got Raymond when I was, who knows, you know, maybe I don't know, 11, 12, who knows? But I kept Raymond. and I brought Raymond to college with me.
Wow. Oh my God, Paul.
So when I moved into my dorm, I had Raymond with me. So it was one of those where everyone knew, okay, this guy's like just a little weird, or he really wants to have kids.
That is so cute.
Yes. So for me, that's a non-starter. We're not, I mean, I'm sorry, we can't do this. If you're not, and it's not even just you being open to the conversation. It's no, you've consciously thought about wanting to have children and you've said to yourself, you are interested.
Yes.
Right. That is a boundary. And so that's one. A very popular non-starter today is, are you interested in being married? Because we're also in a day and age where we have many nuances to coupling now, right?
Yes.
It's not just marriage. You could have hundreds, literally hundreds of variations of coupling, you know, from polyamorous to, you know, other non-monogamous styles to monogamous styles, you know, there's lots of different. And so one question for a lot of people say to themselves, well, you know, I want to be married. I want to be married, but there are many people who have no interest in marriage. That could be a non-starter, right? So non-starters, they're bricks within your boundary fence. They're things that directly impact your health or happiness.
Yes, really like that. I can't believe the time is going by so fast, Paul, but I do want to touch really importantly as well is understanding your own personality type and how important that is. And then how you want to find somebody that has a personality type that complements yours. And really, because really what this comes down to on the very simplest basis is you want to be with somebody that you can get along with long-term.
Yes.
I mean, you are talking about being with this person. If you are thinking marriage and long-term, or even just you want to be in a relationship with somebody, you want to have, you want to enjoy their company and actually be with them. Just have a good, you're here to enjoy life, right? I mean, life is so difficult at times. And if you can't be with somebody that you really want to be with, that you enjoy being with, then what's the point? So I just think there's not enough discussion around personality types when it comes to finding your match. It's like, it's so, like we just talked about in the beginning, it's so much about the stuff like their job or what they look like and their stature and all this. Just like, what are you talking about? You have to really like that person and get along with them.
Right. Amen. Love it. I mean, everything you're saying, I'm saying amen to, you know, that I agree. A matter of fact, via social media, for the last couple of months, I've been really, oh my gosh, I've just been going in on this subject because we don't do enough analysis. And it sounds kind of nerdy to say doing analysis, but that's the case, because if your route is a partner for life, you have to understand that that's the most important decision of your entire life.
Yes.
More important than the schools you go to, more important than the jobs you choose, more important than the friends you choose. It is who is going to be your partner for life. If that's the route that you want to go, that's your most important question, right? So if that's your most important question, if that's the most important decision, you have to give it analysis. You have to give it diligence, right? You have to give it investigation with rigor. And to your question of personality, we don't give personality typically any analysis. And to me, personality is even more important than just base level communication. Because, you know, if you read all the books, you know, are you either into it or maybe you could be anti? I don't know. Because Robin, I sense to me, you seem very one with the world, right? So you may not be into this, but are you into AI?
You know what? I am not.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know much about it, but you know, I know there's a lot, and I don't know yet, but trust me, I'm getting into it because there's a lot of talk about AI, but please share.
Okay. All right. That's fair. Cause some people are very anti.
Oh, I'm not anti, but AI. I don't know much about it yet.
Okay. Well, AI is something just because, you know, my brother's an engineer, and so I'm always listening to him. But long story short is AI is very sophisticated right now. And there's something called ChatGPT, which is definitely like many people are predicting that it's going to overtake Google, you know, even in terms of its sophistication of research. But my first time using ChatGPT, what I did is I went into this AI system and I said, I want you to tell me the 10 most popular books ever written on finding and keeping love. And then ChatGPT gave me the list of the books.
Yes.
And then I said, I want you to summarize each one of these books and tell me what were the top three lessons from these top books ever written on finding, keeping love. And then it works in seconds.
Wow. Right?
So then ChatGPT came back. And number one by far, as you could probably guess, was these books talked about communication.
Yes.
And the importance of articulating an idea and having someone to receive the idea. But this is what I think has been missed in the conversation about communication is great personalities to me. It's about the ability to resolve conflict.
Yes.
That's really what the personality is about, because you can say a relationship is purely about joy, which I think it's definitely about joy. But many of us could also look at a relationship and say, it's also a place of growth.
Yes.
And if a relationship is a place of growth, it must mean it's a place of discomfort, because you can't have growth without discomfort. Mm-hmm. And if it's a place of discomfort, that means it's a place of disagreement. And if it's a place of disagreement, that means it's going to be a place of conflict.
There's going to be conflict, inevitable.
If it is, you need to have communication to resolve the conflict.
Yes.
And to me, that's what having complementary personalities is all
that's
about.
Right.
And that's the reason why it's so important.
That's right. And in your book, you do go through a lot about this. And I think it's not about finding somebody that's exactly like you, because that is probably not going to work. But it's finding somebody that'll compliment you. I think about myself. I was trying to think about, because you use Carl Jung's model of personality types in your book.
Yes.
And I'm thinking to myself, okay. And I have to, and I really want to dive into that a little bit more to actually pinpoint. I think I'm a few. I know my husband's definitely an analyzer. And I think I think I'm definitely like a little bit of a, I don't know, mixed with controller and promoter. I think. Yeah. but I think we really complement each other, because he's so analytical and I'm like the big picture, and he's more like, hey, let's get down to the details of figuring this out, researching. I just think and that comes down to even our communication styles. But when it comes down to getting to know somebody and meshing with them for life and partnering with them, you have to understand their personality so that you can work with it. It's not like, it is who he is. I am who I am. And so we have to learn each other. But anyways, it has so much to do with personality.
Yes, I'm with you.
It's a big topic.
It is.
So we are out of time. I can't believe this, Paul. But I want to talk for another hour about, like, you and Jill have this amazing thing called 10 Lessons About Marriage. And I just want to ask you to come back on our show and we can talk about that, because we talked about the finding and we talked about the keeping, because I think when you implement these principles that we just talked about, when you're looking for a mate, this gives you so much better chance of finding somebody that you can actually be with long term. Really? It's so important. So I think we covered next time we talk, I really want to go into the keeping love and how you do that long term, because you've been with your wife for over 21 years. Is that right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's 22
years. Wow.
Yeah.
That's just beautiful. And yeah, just, you're such a great teacher and a great mentor and all around great guy. So thank you so much, Paul, for our time.
I appreciate it. But Robin, there's one question I have to ask you. You didn't give me the Rachel drink.
Oh, yes. Oh my God. I didn't give you the Rachel story. Okay. So we are similar in the fact that we changed careers. I've had different careers in my life. I sold medical supplies for many, many years. I loved it. I became a realtor. And then I had my first daughter. And I took a year to be with her. And then I was like, okay, I'm going back into the workforce. And I was like, I don't want to do that again. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to do something different. And my twin brother, he's like, Robin, I think you should become a matchmaker. Like, who the hell thinks of that? I feel like it was out of nowhere, like out of left field. And I said to Reese, I was like, are you crazy? Like, what are you talking about? He's like, I think you would love it. I think you just go into it. Just look into it. So I did my research and I found Rachel. I'm like, I'm going to learn from the best of the best. That's the only way to do this. Yes. If I'm going to enter a new career, I better interview different people that are doing really well in this and see if this might be a good path for me. And so I did. Yes. She was one top on my list. I interviewed actually quite a few matchmakers, mostly out of the States. And Rachel said, you need to come to Denver and take my matchmaking boot camp. So I did that. And then I went and joined the Matchmaking Institute with Lisa Clampett. And anyways, I studied and I did the whole thing. I felt like I went back to school for 2 years, started my own practice as a matchmaker and love coach, and did that for many years before entering into this side of the love business. But we have Rachel in common, and I love her so much.
And Lisa is
great. Yeah. So it's a beautiful world being in this business. I really. I get to meet people like you and talk about what's really important, which is our relationships. There's nothing more important.
Nothing more important. Amen. I mean, I've been saying amen to everything that you said. I completely agree.
So I really thank you for your time, Paul. And I look forward to seeing you on the IG. And hopefully at our next summit in Vancouver next year, because I really want you to be a speaker.
Yeah, I would love to go to Canada and be there with you. That would be awesome.
Okay, great. Well, thank you again, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. It's been an honor.
Please visit realloveready.com to become a member of our community. Submit your relationship questions for our podcast experts at reallovereadypodcast@gmail.com. We read everything you send. Be sure to rate and review this podcast. Your feedback helps us get you the relationship advice and guidance you need. The Real Love Ready podcast is recorded and edited by Maya Anstey. Transcriptions by otter.ai and edited by Maya Anstey. We at Real Love Ready acknowledge and express gratitude for the Coast Salish people, the stewards of the land on which we work and play, and encourage everyone listening to take a moment to acknowledge and express gratitude for those that have stewarded and continue to steward the land that you live on as well.